Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we've got a real talk with a real leader. Today is a little bit of a special episode. Well, a lot of it of a special episode, actually, done in partnership with Same Here Mental Health Global Movement. Our guest today is an ambassador for Same Here. He is a professional basketball player, father, husband, and an MS warrior. The first to play in the NBA with MS. And I have to say, when I heard his story, I got the goosebumps. He's just so awesome. And Chris, thank you so much for joining. Folks, this is Chris Wright.
Thank you. Thank you, Shauna. Thank you for having me on here. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So folks, I always tell you how I know the guests. And Chris and I were introduced recently by Eric Cusin. Eric is the founder of Same Here, CEO. He and I, air quotes, did time together in the NBA family. We were a part of the start of the MBDL, which is now the G League. And we've stayed close. Eric has been on the show. So if anybody hears his name and has remembers him from being on. So Eric reached out to me and said, hey, you've got to know Chris, and this is what he's up to and looking for. And I was like, anything for Eric, any friend of Eric's, friend of mine. So, so let's start with that. Actually, Chris, help us root people in. What do you do with Same Here as a part of your platform?
Well, I was introduced to Eric and his nonprofit, Same Here, just off the strength of a good friend of mine who was actually an idol of mine growing up. His name was Mike Sweetney, who played for the New York Knicks. Mike Sweetney played for the New York Knicks. He actually grew up in PG County, Maryland. So I'm from PG County, Maryland, and I was, I watched him my whole career. He's one of those guys that, you grow up and you see somebody that's an NBA player, that's an NBA player. That's how we view Mike. And Mike went to Georgetown, had a great career, and was a lottery pick for the New York Knicks. And over time, I went to Georgetown, and we grew closer over the years. We played together in the summer and played in the TBT tournament, the $1 million tournament together, which we ended up losing in the Final Four. But yeah, so it was a great experience for me, and it was kind of like a dream come true to play with somebody that you had looked up to for so long. And, just over the years, I got close with Mike and got close with his family. My wife has got close with his wife, and he told me what he was doing, and he told me about him being an ambassador and speaking about mental health. I watched him, and I followed some of the things he was doing. And just in a friendly conversation, he said, man, you should get involved if you want to. And so he introduced me to Eric, and immediately me and Eric hit it off. He's just a great guy, very personable, has a lot of charisma, and has a great personality. So before I left to come to Spain, we actually did a speaking engagement in New Jersey, which I was, which Mike introduced me. And so that's how I got involved with it. And we've been staying in contact since I've been overseas. And, I'm looking forward to when I do get back in the summer to continue doing my work with him and just to continue to build and try to do whatever I can to lend my story to try to help the next person. Because my story has a lot of ups and downs and, highs and lows with it. So, and I think just being able to tell the story just will, could help in any way possible. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, like, folks, as you're listening, one of the things that I thought when Eric told me about Chris and I got to read his story about his journey with MS, that was one of the things that really stood out to me about you, Chris, is like you being such an authentic person and leader, the way you tell your story and really to expose that to have a positive impact. And that's so much of what I'm doing on this platform is, showcasing people, diverse, authentic leaders who have the courage to do that. So just thank you. And I'm really excited for the opportunity to help you share that story here.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. And it's crazy. The crazy thing about it, and I appreciate you having me on here, is that people always say, man, Chris, you really are speaking and forward and really adamant and standing firm and, telling your story. But, we'll get into that later. But just a simple fact, when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, I never had a chance to really stay quiet about it, because one of the first situations that happened with me when I was playing in Turkey as a rookie was there was an article put out on me. I heard about me having multiple sclerosis, and within 20 minutes, there was an article put out with me quoted. saying how I feel so terrible about what's happening. My career is over and I feel sad. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. So it went out in the public, and this is all false quote. I never talked to anybody. and it was just put out there, and it was on mainstream. So my social media started going crazy. This is in 2012. And people were calling me. I have 300 messages, and this is in between of me driving from Istanbul, Turkey, where I was playing, to my city, which is about 2 hours away. And I had no service back then, you know, if you run out of service, you know, so yeah, right. I didn't have any service. So I get to my location, I got like 300 messages, and people are like, I'm sorry to hear this. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Excuse my language, but
it's okay.
I'm like, what's going on? So I never had a chance to like try to hide it. It was already out there before I even had an understanding of whatever it was. So I said, okay, I'm just going to embrace it, you know, and run with it.
Yeah. It's so interesting you said that, because one of the things that I was going to ask you was like, were you apprehensive at all? And then it was funny that you say that, because as I was writing it, I was writing myself a note to ask you that. I was thinking, well, because you're already in the public eye like that, right, part of you almost were forced to tell. But even the way you tell the story, it was beyond that. It was like somebody else made that decision for you.
Yeah, completely. I had no control on, you know, even if I wanted to like try to hide this for my career purposes, you know, because this is uncharted territory. No one has played. So maybe I would have been more apprehensive. Maybe I would have been like, oh, let's not try to put this out there. Let's, you know,
yeah,
I don't want to do that, you know, because I'm trying to elevate my career, you know, but I never had that chance. I never even was given that opportunity because it was an article that was publicized. Yeah. So it really damaged a lot of things. It damaged a lot of things. I never had a chance. That was also the same year that there was an NBA lockout. So after my senior season in college, there and after the draft, there was no NBA for further notice. There was no talk. So everybody was going overseas and doing things of that nature. So I really kind of was kind of behind the eight ball on a lot of stuff. And then add the multiple sclerosis in the, you know, March or April of the next year. So that's kind of how it came out. I never had a chance to kind of.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, even in the way you say that, again, when I'm kind of like fast forwarding to a bunch of stuff, folks, so bear with me. But there's an article about Chris, and I have to say, like, I don't know what the hell rock I was living under, because I did not know about your story. And I feel like I really pay attention to sports and all that, but I didn't know about your story. So when Eric introduced us and I read the ESPN article that's linked in your IG profile, I was like, it really struck me how like you're the positive way that you've moved forward through it. And it's just almost, it is, the path is forward. The path is triumphing. The path is just no stone unturned type thing. And again, the way you describe that in that moment, perhaps you had a different, the way it was, you know, told for you, right? Again, without you making that decision, it could have been very much like this bitterness could have overtaken you, or, you know, all of these things. So I think it's a really like a tribute to how your, you know, your strength and the, like your mental, like your mindset about it. That's at least what it seems to me.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm not going to sit here in front, like, you know, I didn't go through every. Yes,
I'm sure you were.
Yeah, let's be real. I went through every emotion possible, you know,
that you can go
through. And I think that's part of the process too. You know, you got to go through every emotion. When you hear something that's a life changing or life path, you know, changing situation, then you're going to go through the emotion. Anybody that only person that doesn't cry, and I know, and Socrates or somebody, you know what I'm saying? That was his only issue. He never cried. But other than that, you know, everybody goes through all different type of emotions, and I went through them all. You know, I went through them all. But after that, I've been fortunate to have I grew up in a great environment. I have a strong family that was my village, that sheltered me and they say, hey, we behind you, whatever you want to do. Yeah. But that kind of gave me strength to, you know, all right, let's figure this out. And, you know, that's how it kind of went for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you said earlier, I want to get a bit to like where you are right now. And you said you're in Spain right now. You're still in season or?
Okay. I'm in season. Yeah. I'm in Zaragoza, Spain, and we are in a FIBA window break right now. So we don't play for the next 2 weeks. So people that don't know, and there's 2 weeks in the season, they have European competitions coming up in the summer. So they have qualifications. So players from different countries in Europe go back and play on the national team. So there's like a two-week period where there's no games because they play on the weekends. So right now we're in a two-week period where we don't have any games. But yeah, I'm playing in the ACB, which is the top division in Spain, and very tough league, very competitive league, and traditionally is known as one of the best leagues other than the NBA. So it's a really good league, really, really competitive, and it's, you know, it's been fun.
That's awesome. So we talk so much about people's evolution. So can we talk first? We're going to get to the details of your MS and all of that. But talk us through your evolution. So from what I know, you were a standout at Georgetown. You started your professional career and spent time in the NBA, I believe in the G League. So talk to us, like, what's that journey been like, and whatever element of your personal life that you want to share in that too, because I think, again, I've been so close to the NBA family and basketball that I think I have a bit of a different view sometimes of athletes. But, you know, again, most people see you as a professional athlete and just playing the game. And so I think, like, just again, to give some human element of your journey, your evolution would be helpful, I think, for the audience.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm born and raised. I'm a Washington, D.C. kid. I'm from PG County. I've been in Washington, D.C. I went to high school in St. John's and St. John's College High School in Washington, D.C. I went to Catholic school, and then I went literally probably 3-4 miles down the street to Georgetown University. And, you know, I come from, my parents been married for 40 years, so I have, you know, a really strong foundation. My parents are from, my dad is from New York. My mom is from Jersey. Okay. And so, you know, that's been pretty much my background. So I always kind of had I was fortunate enough, you know, one of the few out of my friends to have both parents and have that background. And I was, you know, very secure. They were big on education. So it was big for me to go to school. It was big for me. As much as I have a great game in high school, great game in college, are you going to graduate, Chris? It was kind of that type of thing, you know? And, you know, being a professional athlete was always a dream of mine. And it was something that I knew that I was going to do. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew that's what I wanted. The NBA was a dream of mine. Just, you know, from a young kid, I was the biggest Washington Bullets fan you can ever imagine. You know, I was the biggest Rod Strickland fan. I was the biggest. This is when Chris Webber and Rasheed Wallace and Juwan Howard, George Mersant, all those guys, you know, those are the guys that I grew up watching. New Jersey Nets and Philadelphia 76ers. I'm the biggest. Allen Iverson is my favorite player of all time, you know? Don't get me started. I can talk about basketball and the history of basketball for years. You know,
I'm resisting leaning in and be like, ooh, the Nats might have been there at that time. I'd be like, I'm resisting going into a basketball rabbit hole just for the audience here.
That was Steph Marbury and all those years. You know, those are those years. So yeah. Okay. So I mean, I'm a basketball junkie, historian, you know. And so it was a dream of mine always to play in the NBA, to be like these guys.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to wear the NBA logo, to have Jerry West on my chest. That was something I always envisioned, you know, that was just something I see. I make this shot, I'm going to be the 10th pick, and then, you know, I'm going to be number one draft pick, you know, that type of situation. And so ironically, when I came out for the draft, that was the year that they were going through the new CBA. And so the draft happens like it always does on June 25th. And then after that, everything shut down. So I didn't get drafted. And then after the draft, everything shut down. No communication, no summer league, no workouts, no nothing. So at that time, and until further notice, no one knew when it was going to stop at that time. So I'm like, damn, out of all the years, when I'm coming out, there's, you know what I'm saying? But I also knew that I wanted to get paid and be a professional basketball player.
Yeah.
So the next best option was to go overseas at the time. At that time, there was no D League at the time either, you know, obviously, because there was nothing going on. They had a D League, but it wasn't, you know, active. I went overseas and I started my rookie year in Turkey. This is when D Will went to Turkey.
Yeah.
Ty Lawson was in Lithuania playing for Zagoras. Some other guys were going. I remember Lamar Odom was about to come over. And then the NBA went back. So it was a lot of things. It was a really weird time in the basketball world in terms of trying to figure it out, especially for rookies.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so,
you're already in headlights that that happens.
Yeah, I'm already like, what do I do? What do I do? But I was just excited to finally make some money. You know what I'm saying? I was finally, I'm like, oh shit, I can finally get paid to play basketball now. This is awesome. Yeah. You know, then I go back home, ball out. Mm-hmm. You know, so what ended up happening is the NBA resumed in probably like, I can't remember when it resumed, maybe that December or something like that. So guys
it
started
was something coming. Like mid, yeah.
Yeah, it was like mid-season, so it was like it was a short season, and it started. It resumed, and so I went through my season, and that I was having a great rookie year. I was having a you know a really good rookie year. I was putting up solid numbers. Things was going well. We're going really well, and then that's when I got diagnosed. I was in practice. I come to practice the next day. I'm shooting, just getting up extra shots, working out before practice, and then the symptoms of MS started coming. I lost all sensation in my right leg. I lost all sensation in my right arm, and it just shot through my entire body. Watch, I couldn't feel anything.
Wait, so when you say this, were you literally, you were like out there on the court and this is all happening, or was this over time?
No, this happened like this.
This.
It happened just like this on the court. You know how guys go through their pre-workout or on the court just working out? That's what I was doing. I was going through my normal stuff, working on ball handling, shooting, and all that stuff. And then I caught a pass, and I just felt like a rush of a tingling sensation go through my right hand.
Right.
And then it just shot through my hand and shot through my leg, and it just overtook my body to the point where I'm touching myself, and I can't feel anything.
Oh, man.
You know, I'm like, yo, this is crazy. Like, what happened? You know, yesterday I'm winning sprints and all this stuff, and normal kid, normal, you know, normal rookie. And then now I can't feel anything. So I told the coach, and that's a whole nother story. I could talk about the coach, but that's a whole nother story. He didn't like rookies. He didn't like rookies. You know what I'm saying? So, but at this time I was starting to gain his respect, and I was starting to gain his confidence because of the way I work and the way I was handling myself.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as with my teammates, because when you're a rookie, you got to prove yourself.
Yeah.
Especially, it's different when being a rookie in the NBA where you're giving an X amount of money and people know your history. They don't really know you overseas like that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you gotta prove yourself. And you come into a top division in Turkey and these guys have been making this amount of money. You new to, you know, it's a lot of different culturally, the music, I mean, the language, the food, the everything is different. This is a Muslim speaking country. So you're hearing prayers over loudspeakers, which is, I mean, which was a great experience for me. I really enjoyed it. One of my best friends is now, he's Muslim from my experience there. So it was just, it was a total culture shock, but I started to get adjusted to it. And as I'm getting adjusted to it, then I get diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And this thing happens to the point where the next morning I can't walk. I can't stand up. Yeah. I'm in a wheelchair. The whole nine, it was full blown. You know, and I went to go see a specialist in Istanbul, and they said, yeah, I was clinically diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So, boom, I'm like, dang, what, you know, I didn't know what multiple sclerosis was. I had no idea, no clue. And, you know, once the worst thing I probably did, which was the only thing I could do, is type in multiple sclerosis on Google.
My sister tells me, do not visit Dr. Google.
It was the worst thing I could do.
It
was the worst decision. And, you know, I heard all the, it was only negative connotations associated with it. And eventually I was able to figure out things. I met with my neurologist that I'm still working with today.
Oh.
And, you know, within 8 months, I was in the NBA. Playing the NBA with that.
Awesome.
In the NBA with the Dallas Mavericks. And then, you know, so it's just been, it was a journey. It was an extreme journey up and down and throughout. Now I'm in my 12th year, going from many different places. I played 6 years in Italy. I played in Israel. I played in France. I played twice in Turkey. I played in the D League twice. I don't know about the G League. I know about the D League.
Okay, good, good. Wait, so what was your team in the D League? You said you played twice.
Yeah, I played for the Iowa Energy.
Okay.
Now it's the Iowa Wolves.
Okay.
And then I played for the Bakersfield Jam.
See, now none of those existed when I was in. So that's what dinosaur I am.
But you were there. You were in Asheville. Those are the beginning teams.
Yep, I was there. There was eight original teams, and I was there during the start of the league and the
Awesome.
first 2.5 years at Asheville. So,
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah. I
it's
mean, I know about the D, like I'm jealous of the G League players now. Like you
crazy.
guys have no idea what we were doing. I mean, we were warming up and they were washing. We were warming up in our sweatsuits
Oh yeah.
and they were washing our stuff. So we were wearing uniforms on back to backs. So we were putting on our uniforms and they were still damp. But it was awesome though. I loved the G League. I loved it. It was awesome. It
No,
was
I know. It is so true. It's like perspectives, and I think that, you know, we all go on these journeys, and sometimes we don't know the roots of something. And so, you know, sometimes we look at players and we're like, oh, they make all this money and they're like all this fancy stuff. And sometimes it's like, you know, those minor leagues when you're starting, you are just, but I have to say, it's like that passion. Just like for me, at first I didn't care that I was working in the minor leagues for the NBA. I was so proud to have finally gotten myself in the front office side of things to work in the NBA. I was just like out of my mind, you know? But it is, it's like that stuff where I remember we worked in the Civic Center and it was like I looked at a cinder wall block, like cinder blocks all day on the wall. And like, you know, the places that you're playing, they're nothing sexy about it. But it was the start.
It was a start, and it at the time you were excited. You had a lot of energy because of the possibilities
Yes.
that could happen. So, I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, you play a game. We're playing, I don't know, we're playing Austin, the Austin Toros, right? We just losing them in overtime, and we're flying back on the same plane with them to
Oh,
go play them on a back to back at our place. After this guy
yeah.
just scored 30 on you know what I'm saying? So it's like those things. It was a great experience. I think as a young man, if you don't make the NBA as a you know if, as a youth, I think they should do it for women too. I think that would be awesome.
Oh
But if
yeah, that'd be awesome.
they, yeah, but if they if you don't make it to the NBA, that you should experience the G League at least 1 year,
Yeah,
because
okay.
it's a really unique experience. It teaches you a lot, you know, you how to manage things, how to prepare yourself. I think one of the biggest things and toughest things that pro athletes need to figure out is how you're gonna, what's your regimen and how you're gonna
Oh yeah.
prepare yourself each game and each day. And
Yeah.
you kind of learn that in the G League because you don't have a lot of resources at that time, you know.
No, it's so true. And this was not at all planned for this conversation, but since you're going there, I think it's so interesting. Like all the advances that have happened with like NIL and all this kind of stuff, part of me, it's like, it's great. But at the same time, if those opportunities don't come with that, the education, the stuff to set them up for success. I remember back in the
Blow
day,
up.
it was like those MBA player programs and stuff and everything. But because to your point, it like prepares you for the next step. And
It does.
when the D League started, it was supposed to be very much this like training ground for the front office as well as for, you know, the players on the court and the coaches and all that kind of stuff. And you'd get called up, air quotes, called up, whether
Right.
you were in the front office or playing. That was what we were all hoping for. And
Right.
but it was like this preparation to get you, because yeah, I mentioned this earlier. Like, I often talk about it as the headlights. I cannot imagine you go from like Georgetown to like, you know, again, all of a sudden you're in, if you were all of a sudden in the NBA, if it wasn't the lockout. I mean, it would be great, but at the same time, talk about headlights. Like, how the hell are you supposed to manage your life, your image, your
Right.
game, your all of that? It's like, it's crazy.
Now let's take that a step further, Sean. And like now think about going from Georgetown to now playing overseas.
Oh
And
yeah.
you're playing in an arena, you're playing at that time, now it's Capital One. It was MTI Center and Verizon Center back when I was, you know, playing. But
Yeah.
you're playing there is 19,000. Now you're playing in arenas of 4,000, 5,000.
Yeah.
And after practice, you're used to just putting your stuff in a laundry bag.
And
And they
sleep.
watching it for you, but no, you gotta pay for that. Sometimes you may have to tape your own ankles,
Oh.
you know. You gotta get your own, you gotta get sometimes if
Yeah.
you don't have ice, things of that nature. Like it's a whole different world.
Right.
That's what people don't understand. People are like, oh, you go overseas, you get to experience overseas, you get to experience different countries. Like, yeah, it's a lot of that comes with that.
Yeah,
It's a lot that
exactly.
comes with that. And I think that it propels you and helps you later down in the road when you come when you want to move on to whatever next you want to move on to or whatever else. When you come back home, you start to appreciate things at a much different level than you did previously, you know. So
Yeah.
it's It's really interesting. So you're going from the D League and all that stuff, then you go overseas and you experience how they live in overseas and just the cultural differences.
Yeah.
You come back and that transition over and doing that over and over, you start seeing how things are so drastically different, you know.
Right.
It's really amazing. I've been able to see it for, you know, I've been moving back and forth for 10 years overseas and just and seeing that, oh man, it's really amazing to see.
That's amazing. So if you don't mind me asking, what I said earlier about, and I've read some of the stuff about, you know, your wife and your children and like, can you talk about that dynamic? And I mean, talk about all that transitioning and whether it was even, you know, the journey that you've been through with your health and you know, any of that, like from a family perspective and managing that, like what's that all about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So
I said, besides difficult, what's that all about?
I mean, it's been my consistent. So it's been my constant. So that's actually hasn't been the difficult for me. So fortunately, I met my wife at 13 years old. We were friends. I met in my high school gym. I was working basketball camp and she actually came to me. But that's not what for me, you know, after my rookie year, I was by myself. I was in Turkey by myself and we reconnected. My wife played college basketball. She ended up coaching at George Washington University and also coaching at High Point University. And so we were always friends. We always kind of stayed in contact. We always kind of, you know, high school, we go to like homecoming and stuff like that together. And then, you know, she went to a different school. So we, you know, we ain't see each other all the time. So I'm kind of doing my thing. She's doing her thing. You know how that goes. It's high school.
Yeah.
So, so in college goes, she's a year ahead of me as well. So, so we reconnected after my rookie year, actually when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And her father is the reason why we reconnected. I saw him in the store. I'm in there. I don't know what I was doing. I was in the mall buying something or doing something, just whatever. And he's like, "Hey, Chris, what's up? How you been?" He said, "Man, have you talked to Aaron lately?" I'm like, "Nah, I haven't." You know, he's like, "Take your number down." I'm like, "Okay." You know, this is not how I expected, but all right. Pops is saying, "Talk to my daughter." So, and that's how we reconnected.
Okay.
And from the first time we hung out, first time we went on a date, I told her, I was up front with her. You know, I was like, "I have multiple sclerosis. I don't know what that exactly means in totality, you know what I'm saying? But I put my best, you know, put my best little spin on it. I like it, this and the third, blah, blah, blah." And she went for it, you know? And, but we had always had a connection, never got into any arguments. We were always really connected, always.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was an easy kind of transition. So then we started to date and started to, in my first year, I decided after I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, I decided to stay home and play in the D League.
Okay.
Because I wanted to be familiar. I wanted to just kind of get on track with, you know, such a new lifestyle for me.
Right,
you know,
right.
At that time, the medicine that I was taking, I was getting an IV injection once per month.
Oh, okay.
So at that time, I didn't really want to leave the States. I said, "Let me stay home. Let me try to figure this out. Let me, you know." That was the route that I took. And she was working college basketball. She was coaching college basketball at High Point University. And so we got pregnant. She got pregnant with our first at High Point. And I was like, "Listen, this is what we're going to do. You either going to come with me or I'm going to just stop playing and we're going to figure this out. Cause I'm not going to be, I didn't want to be away from my child. You know, I didn't want to be away from my child ever, never. That was always my thing. My dad wasn't away from me. I wasn't away from, I'm a big family person. Always wanted to be a family. Always wanted to have a family young. I don't know why, but I did. And so she was like, "All right." So we made a pact and we started traveling the world together. And we've always done that. So my first year, I went to France. We lived in Lyon, France. And then we, after France, where did we go? This was so many years ago. We went to Italy, we went to Israel, and we've been traveling. Like my son's first words, and we have now have three kids. I have my son, CJ, he's the oldest. Then I have two daughters, Charlotte. My son just turned 10 last week. We were in Barcelona for his birthday. And then my daughter, Charlotte, she's turning 7 in like a week. Then my youngest, Camilla, is 3 years old.
Oh,
And it's been great. You know, they've been able to experience. They spent 6 years. My son has spent most of his life in Italy, but his first words were in Hebrew because we were in Israel.
Okay,
You
that's
know,
so cool.
his first time walking, we were in France. You know, he was walking in France. So it was just, it's been a great experience for them to be to experience many different cultures, many different people. And my wife
Right.
loves to travel.
Oh,
So
nice.
it's been a win-win situation. And for me, I've enjoyed it just for the simple fact that, you know, you one thing about being overseas and playing overseas, you can get really lonely, especially on the holidays, especially because there's no family there. There's no people that you can connect with. But for me, having my family with me and being able for them to experience everything, it's really been, you know, icing on the cake for all this. That's what makes things easy. And it kind of keeps me in line. Like, you know, if I have a bad game, I can't bring it in the house. After I leave I gotta be daddy now. You know, I gotta be a husband. I can't be, you know, you gotta how you say, compartmentalize all of
Compartmentalize.
that. Compartmentalize all of that and it so that actually has been a way for me to be disciplined and organized, and it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I had wondered what it was like with with the traveling and stuff, with your treatments and everything. And again, also one of the things I was going to ask you is like, what have been some of the things that have helped you to stay grounded through it? But I love that the way you talk about it. And I think as people are listening, it doesn't matter what area of, I'll call it a career you have. I think some of the things that you're talking about are so relatable about priorities, the circle you keep, how do you set your life up to work for you? And I think, I had this moment in when I was in my late 30s, I was still in New York with my husband, and we were like, we finally found each other. And we're like, we have one shot at this together. And we finally found each other. Where do we actually want to live and be happy and create the life that fuels us? And I think, that's been with a huge shift and transition from what I used to live, which was like all work 24/7, all that kind of stuff. And so I just think it's great to be being so real about this. I think is really helpful for people who are listening, because so many times we compromise our priorities. We kind of do what others may expect, but I think there is an element of being able to shape your life and so that you can actually be successful.
Absolutely. I think for me, it was certain things that it was some non-negotiables that I had, you know, like I was like, yo, y'all coming with me, or I'm gonna stop this and I'm gonna figure this out. Like it was just how it was, you know. And so me and my wife have been married now for 7 years, and it's going on 8 years in June. And you know, we just this is something that I wanted to do, and something that she wanted to do. And so our paths align with where we wanted to go. And you know, so it's been fun. It's been a journey. We've been, you know, we moved twice a year, obviously, because we come over here and then we got to go back. You know, we have our home in DC, but it's like we're always on the go. We're always on the go. But I personally enjoy it. Yes, it can be a pain in the ass carrying 10 bags through the airport. Yes, it definitely can. It sucks at times. But all in all, it's a good experience.
Well, that is awesome, folks. You heard it all here. Thank you for everything you're doing for your own evolution, for the evolution of others around you, and to create positive impact in this world. Everybody have an awesome day. Thank you.